A margin of life is developed by nature for all living things, including man. All life's forms obey nature's demands, except man, who has found ways of ignoring them. And that was said by Eugene M. Perot. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I'll be your host for the next hour. Well, folks, I'm now home again in Byron Bay after my journey to James Price Point in Western Australia. It was indeed an interesting journey along the way. Many things revealed themselves and lessons were most certainly learned by all, including myself. The situation that the people of James Price Point in Broome, Australia are facing is a very, very desperate situation, folks. And what I saw during my time over there really did open my eyes to a lot of things. Something that I unfortunately did notice amongst many people, and which is probably to be expected, was a large degree of division. I saw a lot of people with their own agendas, and I saw a lot of people that were not in their heart, unfortunately. But again, this is the way humankind has been trained to be, and so it is to be expected that people have such a mindset about them. Something that was most disturbing that I saw while I was over there was the blatant corruption displayed by the Western Australian Police Department while I was there. I'd always been told that Western Australia was a police state, and that was absolutely confirmed to me during my stay in Broome and during my stay at the road blockade at James Price Point. The police over there unfortunately have little or no regard for the people of the town. The treatment of the Aboriginal people in Broome is also quite disgraceful. And it seems that the local Broome Council, the local government in the area, is purposely setting up situations where the Aboriginal people will be victimised. They're really trying to just get them out of town. They want to turn Broome into a mining town, and they're not interested in having the original owners of the land there to complain about the environmental damage and the corporate corruption that is being promoted in the town by the local government and that is supported and defended by the corrupt police force of the Broome area. There was one instance, actually, when a friend of mine was arrested and I went into the police station to inquire as to their well-being. The police officer asked me why I was there. I said I was there to inquire about the person who was unlawfully arrested by a corrupt police officer out at the road blockade 30 minutes before. The police officer smugly smiled at me and said, unlawfully. And I said, yes, it was unlawful. The offending officer grabbed the wrong person in front of 25 people. They assaulted the person and then they kidnapped them by placing them in their police car and driving away. The police officer said it wasn't kidnapping. And I said, well, excuse me, if I was to go out and grab that girl over on the street there and assault her and throw her in the back of my car and drive away, what would you call that? And then the police officer left the room. There was another instance when they came back and I asked the police officer if they were a public servant. The police officer said, no, I'm not a public servant, I'm a member of the Western Australian Police Force. I said, is the Western Australian Police Force not a government department then? And they said, no, it is not a government department. And I said, well, that would indicate to me that the Western Australian Police Force is then a private company, at which point the officer again left the room. So there should be no doubt in anybody's mind that organisations such as the Western Australian Police Force are in fact private companies, private corporations, who spend their time enforcing non-existent contracts against people in their area in order to defend the corporate corruption that is running the entire area. Something very noticeable about Broome was that the jail is in the centre of town. just in case people thought they might want to stand up against the system while they're there. It's just sort of there as a reminder. Right next to the police station in the main street, there is the jail. And this isn't merely a little jail, folks. This is the Broome Regional Prison. It's right there in the main street of town, which, of course, is a very touching and very family-oriented statement for the local Broome Council to be making to the people. And I hope that came across with all the sarcasm and derision that it deserves. Now, something else that's going on in Broome is that the police have what is known as move-on notices that they give people. These notices have been developed purely for the Aboriginal people, because they like to give them move-on notices so that they can't stay in any one area for too long. The Aboriginal people, the original people, are a nomad type of society, a nomad type of culture. They spend most of their time simply gathering under trees and fishing and enjoying life. And so, of course, the council comes and gives them move-on notices that they're not allowed to gather under these trees. And so the original people go and find another tree to gather under, at which point the council will come along and chop the tree down so that they don't have any areas to congregate. And I think the fact that they chop down the trees of any areas that the original people like to congregate in really does speak volumes about the breach of trust that these government trustees, government employees are actually carrying out against the people on a daily basis. There's also been a lot of work done with native title and all of this sort of stuff to actually grant land to people who are not the original owners of the land and who are more likely to sign the land off for mining in order for some type of financial reward from the corrupt Western Australian government. And this is also very, very noticeable in the area. Something else that I noticed in Broome was that there was an Aboriginal community that was set up just on the outskirts of town. Only as soon as the community was up and fully functioning, the government cut all funding to the community and they don't even pick up their garbage anymore. And then they built a brand new housing estate behind the Aboriginal community so that the back fences of this housing estate actually share the same back fences with the Aboriginal community. Of course, since the council has cut off all funding to the Aboriginal community, it's turned into a bit of a squalid sort of a suburb because obviously there is no services provided to the community, and so it's basically been allowed to turn into a slum. And this, of course, is the only effect that it will have if you cut off all support to a community. This is, of course, what has been planned to be done. And they've done this, they've turned the place into a slum and then built this housing estate to back onto it. So, of course, the people from the housing estate are quite shocked at the disgusting conditions of the dirty Aboriginal people who live over the back fence. And, of course, as I said, the Aboriginal people that live over the back fence have been forced into a state where they have to basically carry their rubbish to the tip themselves because not many of them can afford cars or anything like that. And so the place has basically turned into a quite squalid slum society. And this has been done, of course, by design. And it has the effect of causing people to look down upon the Aboriginal community with disdain and see them, of course, as a bunch of dirty people who simply can't look after themselves. While, of course, they, on the other side of the fence, are provided with full services from their local council. As far as the 10,000 amend event goes that we were putting on in Broome, there was up to 300 at one stage, but we really did need at least 1,000 people on the ground, and that's what I was hoping for. Because with a large amount of people on the ground, we could have actually been in a position to be able to create some type of impasse where it was impossible for the miners to get through and it was impossible for the police to contain. And had that happened, then this would have forced a politician to come to the negotiating table and the entire situation could have been approach from a perspective of trust law. But because we didn't have that amount of people on the ground, then, of course, the next option was to teach the people that were there about trust law. But, of course, in order for people to even understand the basic concept of trust law, they must first be in their heart. It is very important that people do so, because if people learn a little bit about trust law and then go off to attack the system, well, as the saying goes, a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing. And to give people a perspective of trust law when they simply aren't in their heart is really a breach of the duty of care that I have for humanity, because all I would succeed in doing is doing exactly that, folks, giving people enough information to hang themselves, and then I would be very much responsible for the trouble that they caused by going in half-cocked. And with the disparity amongst the groups that were there, it was very difficult to be able to teach people the trust law that I wished to teach them while I was there. However, it did provide an opportunity for me to see what's actually going on the ground, and it did provide the people there an opportunity to see what I had brought to the table to offer them, had there not been so much division amongst the people. And I think it was actually quite positive, folks, because during the last couple of days that I was there, I did do 3 workshops in 2 days, and I do intend to go back to Broome after the wet season, probably about April or May next year, at which point I will be hopefully addressing things from a perspective of trust law. Now, folks, the work that is being done by the people on the ground in Broome is absolutely remarkable. The people who maintain the blockade against the miners are there every morning at 5 o'clock in the morning to block the morning shift, and they are there at every afternoon at 1:30 in the afternoon to block the afternoon shift. Sometimes they hold them up to 3 or 4 hours at a time. This costs Woodside literally hundreds of thousands of dollars in wages and in lost production. And currently the gas hub that is being built there is 2 years behind schedule because of the actions of the people on the ground. They only have to hold it up for another 7 or 8 weeks, and then the wet season will arrive in Broome and all of the roads will turn into rivers and it will be impossible for people to work on the hub. But they must still maintain their presence there. There is a protest camp out at the end near James Price Point, a camp that's known as Walmerdun. This is where they wish to send the pipeline out across the sand dunes, and this is why the camp is there, because the camp being there, which is basically a tent embassy, is what is preventing the final stages of the pipeline being built. Now, folks, this area in James Price Point, there were dolphins playing just off the shore, surfing in the waves. And when the tide in the area goes out and the reef is exposed, what we find in the reef is dinosaur footprints running across the reef. And the area is also a whale nursery where the whales come to rear their young to help them become strong enough for ocean voyages. And all of this is under threat by the coal seam gas industry. I spoke to some of the gas workers and I said, you do understand why people are doing this, don't you? You do understand that we are standing against this pipeline and this infrastructure and this gas hub, not only because of the historical significance of the area in regard to the traditional Aboriginal people who live here, but also because this industry is contributing to the destruction of our water table. The man said, well, you're talking about fracking, and there is no fracking that's happening here. And I said, well, no, there isn't, but the pipeline supports this infrastructure. And Australia is a spring-fed nation. If we are going to simply allow things like this pipeline to be built, then what we are doing is we are saying it's okay for our elected trustees to destroy our water table in order to support a fictional economy that's based on interest-bearing debt. And even for a politician to suggest that we do this is obviously not the act of a sane mind. So we are here standing up against this gas hub because we care. We care about the future, we care about the future for our children, and we care about the future for your children as well. Because if this gas hub is allowed to be built and the coal seam gas industry is allowed to flourish in this country, then we are all condemning our children to a hell on earth because we are destroying the water table in this country. And if we allow this to continue, then in 15 years or so from now, the only people who will be living in Australia will be people who are working on the gas fields, and they will be drinking recycled water. And so it's imperative that this gas hub be stopped. And folks, anybody out there listening to this show, if you ever wanted to do something in your life that really will make a difference to the future of humanity, then go to Broome, Australia. Make your way to James Price Point and support the people who are maintaining this blockade because they are doing so in order to maintain your future. And I have no qualms in saying that because it is very, very true. Since I've returned, I've found people that have even talked about the event here, said how heavily involved they were in the 10,000 Amend event because on that day they were sitting at the beach with a circle of 30 people and they were meditating with crystals, sending us positive energy. And that's all very well, folks, but what's needed is people on the ground at James Price Point. And you can meditate and send positive intentions as much as you want, but as I said, what is needed is people on the ground. And these people are remarkable folks. They are staying up all night. They are sneaking into the compound and seeing what's going on at the gas hub. They're blocking traffic at every opportunity they can. Some of them are even locking onto machinery and locking onto drill rigs to prevent them from operating. All you actually have to do is walk into the gas hub and get inside the safety barrier, and they have to shut down the machines because of the health and safety regulations. You can't be in there if you're not wearing a hard hat and not following all the specifications that they have on the site. But the site, of course, is public land. It's not private land. They have no right to put up a keep out sign. They have no right to even put up a safety barrier. They have no right to even actually be drilling on the land. Another thing that they're doing there is they wish to drill a 6-kilometre hole into the earth through all the aquifers simply to see how long it takes to fill up. So they really do not care about the damage they are doing to the aquifers. Everything they are doing is blatantly unlawful and it is environmental vandalism. They are being supported in doing it by the corrupt and highly criminal Western Australian government run by a psychopath known as Colin Barnett. And I have no problems calling you a psychopath, Mr. Barnett, because I would suggest that any person who is willing to trash the water table in their country in order to support an economic system that is based on interest-bearing debt certainly does not have a rational mind and certainly should be required to undergo psychiatric evaluation. And I would also suggest that the fact that you are doing it with blatant and ruthless disregard for the needs of the people indicates that you are indeed a psychopath. And I think you should be removed from office and locked up in a grin bin wearing a straitjacket to ensure that you don't destroy any more lives than you already have through your blatant support of corporate corruption. You see, it's corporate corruption that causes all of these problems, folks, and it is the fact that our governments support corporate corruption. This is something that's been really good to see noticed by the Occupy movements as well. I find it very reassuring that the single demand of the entire Occupy movement is a separation of government and corporate power. And this is a very good thing because the merger of state and corporate power is what is known as fascism. And this is exactly what we are seeing implemented in all our countries around the world, in every country that is a so-called democracy. Unfortunately, this is the way democracy works, folks. See, people have been trained to think that democracy means freedom. But democracy does not mean freedom. What it means is mob rule. And this is how our government is getting away with all of this sort of stuff. See, our government here in Australia can say, well, the majority of people support coal seam gas mining. And that is simply because the majority of people in this country are crammed into cities where they are fed processed food, fluoridated water, and are educated by the television. So very few of them have any real comprehension or any real understanding of reality itself. And so they're quite happy to support any industry that the government tells them they should support because they believe the government is acting in their best interest because that's what they're educated to believe. You see, this is why cities were created. Cram people into these compact societies where they will believe anything they're told. And one of the most interesting things about compact societies and cities is that the more you cram people closer together, then the more divided they become from each other because you take away their personal space. And so they tend to lock themselves away from everybody around them in order to maintain their personal space. So it's very interesting when you see that the more people you have crammed together in a concentrated area, the more divided these people become from each other. And so it's very easy for the government to say, well, the majority wants this because the majority is stupid and they've been trained to be stupid. And this is unfortunately what real democracy is. It is the rule by decree of the uneducated, dumbed down and grossly stupid majority. And by calling the majority stupid, I don't wish to belittle anybody. I'm simply stating an observation of fact because it is unfortunately true. But again, you can't blame these people for being stupid because they've been trained to be stupid. They have the perception of reality that the system has trained them to have. And of course, this has happened because of our failure to stand up and address the system itself. And so this is the cause of the problem, folks. As I've always said, it actually comes down to doing the inner work so that you may break down the divisions that you have with your neighbours and thereby have the ability to stand up en masse against this system. And look, don't get me wrong with all of this, folks. I'm not saying simply because you live in a city you're stupid or anything like that. I mean, there are people who are awake, but unfortunately the majority of people who live in cities are stupid. Actually, the majority of people who live in the world are stupid because they're trained to be stupid. That's the important thing for people to understand. So you can't blame people for not knowing what's going on because all people can really know is what they're subject to, what they experience themselves. All they can really process is the information that they're given. And if they're never given the right information, then obviously they're never going to be able to process it, are they? So they're going to have a very disjointed perspective of reality. And that's what we see in the world today. And folks, this goes so deep on so many levels with so many people. And even as someone who is trying to bring the truth to the world and offer a different perspective to people in the world, it can be enormously frustrating. I mean, I find myself getting mad sometimes with people. It just happens because of frustration. When I was in James Price Point, I was attempting to convey an understanding of trust law to a group of people at one stage, and I kept referring back to the fact that God created man and gave man dominion over the earth. And this is how we need to approach it, because ultimately my name is man. Everything that comes below that is fiction. And I was attempting to bring this to people, and one woman piped up and said, look, I'm sick of you calling me man. I'm a woman. I believe you're lost in this patriarchal view of society. And she just couldn't grasp the fact that I was talking about the species. I was trying to explain to her that souls do not have any sex. Your soul is male-female in nature. It doesn't decide which sex it's going to experience until it comes into reality and decides on what sort of a body it's going to have. And that she was actually caught up in the matriarchal-patriarchal division that has been offered to her by the New Age movement in order for her to never really look at the concept that she belongs to a species known as man. And I said to her, if you're saying you're not man, what are you? Are you a dog or a cat or a porcupine? What are you if you are not relevant to the species that is man? And she said to me, I'm a human being. And I said, well, let's look at that word. A human being. A being that is the hue of man. Well, I'm not something that is the color of man. I am man. Because that is what God created. Whatever you perceive God to be. When I talk about God, folks, I only use the word because I don't know what else to call the creator, apart from the creator or God. And so that's the word that I use. And I'm not particularly religious. I would say that most people have figured that out by now. But anyway, trying to explain to this woman what I was saying and get her past this matriarchal, patriarchal, divided way she views the world was extremely difficult. And it became very frustrating simply attempting to help this person to step back from herself and get over herself and start looking at things holistically. And this is what you find with a lot of people. Many of them are really only able to view reality by placing themselves at the central point in the picture rather than looking at reality from a holistic perspective. And so don't worry if sometimes you find yourself a little bit frustrated, folks, because it happens to me as well. It certainly happened to me at James Price Point. I mean, with a combination of the tenseness of the situation, the extremeness of the desert heat, because we are talking about a roadblock that is in the middle of the desert here, folks. We have temperatures of around 30 to 40 degrees every day with these people standing out in the sun for sometimes hours on end, blocking these convoys from reaching the gas hub. I mean, the day I left, the temperature was 39 degrees on the ground, folks, and it isn't even summer yet. This is just the middle of spring. So it does get very stressful, folks, and I found myself to be very much on edge for a lot of the time that I was out there. The mosquitoes, the lack of food, the stressfulness of the police coming every day, the stressfulness of the blockades and the gas hub and the disparity amongst many of the people. And it all certainly does take its toll. So even those of us who understand how this works can still get very much tested simply by the surroundings that we find ourselves in. But look, I think it's break time here, folks, so I better leave it there for now, and we'll go and have a break, and I'll be back talking to you again in a few minutes. Thank you for listening. And welcome back, folks. Now, before the break, I mentioned the Occupy movement. And, folks, I would be keeping a very careful eye on this whole movement. I mean, it could be a good thing. It absolutely could be a good thing. It may be that people have simply had enough and wish to make some type of stand, or at least show their solidarity with others, and so this is what they're doing. But because the Occupy movement doesn't really seem to have presented any alternative to the system it's attempting to bring down, it does very much leave the whole movement open to be co-opted by whoever wants to present some type of alternative system. I would suggest that we will probably see elements of socialism, elements of capitalism, elements of communism, and possibly even calls for global governance come out of this movement. And they would be things that I would be keeping a very careful watch for, because you can't mobilize this amount of people and not get the attention of many would-be rulers and many would-be dictators and many people who have whatever ism they support that they would like to bring to the table. If the Occupy movement is directed solely at the separation of state and corporate power, if it is dedicated to taking the interest off money and cancelling global debt, then it's a good thing if it sticks to those principles. But if we see some type of leadership or global system being suggested by this group, then I would be running very rapidly the other way. So that may be something to look out for. I have heard reports from a couple of people that said to me, now there are people speaking at the rallies that are calling for global governance, and I haven't been able to confirm that myself because I only just got home. I simply haven't had the time. But I would be very disturbed if there is any truth in that, because that is exactly the opposite of what we actually need. Folks, what we are really facing in the world today, and I've said this to you many times before, what we are really facing is a system of fear-based mind control. And the only thing that's going to free you from this system is yourself. You have to remove the fear from within yourself and break down the barriers between you and the people around you. Understand that we're all in this together. There is no other method that can be used to fix this reality. There's nobody who's going to come and save you. There's no method of New Age meditation or any of this other fluffy stuff that's going to help change the world. The only thing that's going to do it is yourself. You have to change things within yourself. Now, humanity and the world itself currently finds itself in a very precarious predicament. But all of the problems that we're facing actually come from ourselves. They come because we feel we need to support an economic system at any cost. We've been taught to believe that the entire world functions around this economic system. The economics of the world is what runs the world, when in actual fact it is the economic system that has been put in place across the world that is responsible for destroying the world. It's responsible for enslaving the human race, and it's the support of this system that is the real problem that we face. And again, we support this system because of the state of fear that we're kept in. We're all in fear of what should happen if the economy should fail, in fear that we may not be able to buy the stuff that we believe we need. In fear of the system itself, we follow the rules the system imposes on us because of our fear of the police, our fear of going to jail, and our fear of the pain that the system itself may inflict upon us if we fail to comply. And yet the system itself was built by mankind. Apparently it was built to service mankind's needs. And yet mankind finds itself completely enslaved to this system because of the state of fear we are kept in. And this happens due to the fear-based mind control that we are subject to every day at the hands of the system itself. And the way to fix it, the way to break it all down, is to simply look within and break down these barriers that exist between yourself and your neighbours. I keep coming back to this same thing. I've been repeating myself ad nauseum for 3 years about this issue because it truly is the way to fix the problems. You know, if you can adopt that approach to living and adopt it in your everyday life, then you can literally change the world. If we could do this, we could eliminate all of the problems that we're facing. And it wouldn't matter about the financial system because we would be looking after each other naturally, as we should be doing. We wouldn't have companies such as Monsanto controlling our food and destroying global health. We wouldn't have Big Pharma. I mean, these sort of companies simply wouldn't exist, because if humanity was looking out for each other and was able to step out of this fear-based mind control, these companies would never have come into being in the first place. It's the fear that we have of the system itself and the fear that we have of each other that has created these companies. In fact, everything that we see in the world today, the coal seam gas mining, the wars, the starvation, the sickness, everything that we see, I would say is a direct reflection of the things inside of ourselves that we have not yet dealt with. And essentially, it is the fear that dwells in the hearts of most people. And a big part of the battle is removing this fear. Removing this fear and stepping back and looking at reality from a holistic perspective. and understanding the trust law, because trust law is simply the common sense language of the heart when it all comes down to it. Trust law is simply me knowing who I am and knowing what position the government is supposed to play in my life, knowing who they are, knowing that there's only really two types of law on the planet, and that is God's law, which is trust law, and man's law, which is contract law. And even the legal system that is in place that affects people in so many ways, it all comes down to fear again. People don't feel that it's right what's been done to them, all these so-called laws that are in place, and yet they comply with them because of the fear they have of not complying with them, because they simply don't understand how the system works. And again, they have this lack of knowledge about how the system really functions because they're not taught how the system functions. Though it is becoming a little more blatant how corrupt things actually are these days, and I believe that's causing a lot more people to wake up. Interestingly, we've had carbon tax now has gone through in Australia, a vote of 74 to 72. When you actually look at polls in the country, what you find is that 83% of Australians do not want carbon tax, and the point here is simple, and the point is that Australians no longer have a representative government that is guided by the will of the people, and the people of Australia no longer have any say in the laws that are imposed upon the people. Well, the statutes that are imposed upon the people that are passed off as being actual laws when really they are nothing of the sort. They are simply statutes, they are simply legislation, and as I've said before, the sole purpose of legislation is to remove natural law from the face of the earth and impose in its place the will of individuals. And this is a very dangerous state that we find ourselves in, folks, and it's happening in all so-called democratic nations, virtually across the board, wherever you look in the world. The only really good thing about it is that it's happening now in full view, and therefore it will very likely be instrumental in waking still more people up to the fact that our governments are all in breach of trust, and they are in the process of stealing all they can from the people. And folks, as I've often said, this can all be basically traced back to the Crown Corporation. It's run by the banking cartels. It's run via a corporate system that has been encroaching itself further and further around the world and is now in the process of taking over the countries that it hasn't yet taken over. It relates back to the Vatican, to the three trusts that were put in place and the Unum Sanctum Trust that was put in place by Pope Boniface. And it's held in place via the imposition of a corrupt legal system which has set itself up to masquerade as actual law. You'll find that when you look at the global political system, folks, the people who run the legal system, which is, of course, the politicians, you'll find that all these people are lawyers. And it actually says in the Australian Constitution in this country that a lawyer may not be a politician. It's not legal for a lawyer to be a politician, and yet we find our Prime Minister, Julia Gillard, is in fact a lawyer. And what lawyers do is they have superseding oaths to the Bar Association, which imposes this system of legal regulations upon people. And legal has nothing to do with lawful. Legal is not lawful. Legal means statutes. Lawful means actual law, as in trust law, as in common law. So this is how this system is all put in place, and it's a corporate system that's run by legal means, and the people within the system, namely you and I, are kept enslaved to the system via the banking system. It's very clever the way they've done it, folks, and it's quite a complex system, but once you realize it's there, you can simply step back from it and see it, and then you begin to see what the remedy is. And the remedy is, as I keep saying, to break down that fear that exists within ourselves, step out of the fear-based mind control and connect with those around you and stand up in mass against this system. This is what I'm hoping will develop from the Occupy movement, so I'm really hoping that they will go somewhere positive. But as I previously said, they are very, very open to being co-opted in their present form. So I would be keeping a very, very close eye on developments with the entire Occupy movement. I think it's great that so many people are actually willing to go and stand up against the global situation, though. I really do. I think that many people that are involved in the movements really do have a genuine hope for better change, and they have simply had enough of what's going on. They're sick of being stolen from by the banking cartels. They're sick of having a corporate system imposed upon them when they're actually not corporations. They're people. They have souls. They deserve to be free. Nobody deserves to be enslaved to the system that we're currently enslaved to. And everybody is enslaved, folks. It's indentured servitude. And it's happening right under people's eyes, but many people simply don't realize it. They believe that freedom of choice is freedom, when actually it's just a facade that's been put there to blind them to what true freedom actually is. But I think we may be on the verge of changing much of that, folks. Getting back to James Price's point even, it was great to actually go and participate in the event that happened over there, and it was very educational to see the type of corruption that we are dealing with right there on the ground. The people in James Price Point are really on the front line battling against this corruption. The Aboriginal people of the area are battling to save their heritage, and the people that are helping them are battling to save not only the Aboriginal heritage, but also the water table on the planet, an extremely environmentally sensitive area, the dinosaur footprints, the whale nursery, and all of the significant things that the area has to offer. And they're really battling a virtual army to try and accomplish this, folks. They're battling not only the corrupt Western Australian government and the corrupt police force, but also Woodside's security forces, which are virtually a private mercenary army. Many of the Woodside security people are ex-police, ex-military, ex-Iraq, ex-Afghanistan, all of this sort of stuff. I believe a former sergeant of Broome Police is actually the head of Woodside security. So each corporation is scratching the back of the other corporations, and it is an extremely corrupt situation, and the ones who are suffering are the people, and not only the people of Broome, but the people of Australia. Any person who likes water is actually suffering from the actions of this company and from the actions of the Western Australian government. But as I've said before, folks, I really do believe that coal seam gas and fracking and this pipeline and all of the things that the government is currently doing are presenting mankind with a wonderful opportunity for unity. Because once people realize the significance of this, and once people realize that the governments are actually willing to trash the water table in order for economic gain, then it really does cause the blinkers to come off a lot of people's eyes. They begin to see that if the government is willing to do this, then perhaps it's willing to do just about everything, because water is the source of life on this planet. And just the fact that they would do that really does speak volumes, folks. Well, we're getting close to the end of the show here. All in all, I am glad that I went to James Price Point. I am glad that I made the pilgrimage that I made. I am glad that I was involved in the ceremony that I was involved in at Uluru. I'm pleased to have met the people that I met along the way. It was enjoyable to spend 4 days with David Icke out in the centre of Australia. I did enjoy that. I did enjoy the company of the other people on the tour as well. And I do respect all the people that I met at James Price Point, the people that are on the ground, that are making a difference. And I'd also like to put a word out for the people from Nimbin. Actually, a couple of the girls from Nimbin were incredible in their loyalty and their steadfastness in supporting the blockade. They're up there every morning, folks, in their polite uniforms. These actually look like police uniforms, only the word police has been replaced by the word polite. And they look quite effective out there on the road in their blue uniforms, holding up the traffic. And they were legends, folks. The people of Nimbin here, Australia, have, of course, been fighting against police corruption and standing up for their rights for a great many years now, and so they are no stranger to roadside blockades, and it really was great to have them there. But ultimately, all the people on the ground there were absolutely fantastic, and it was wonderful to see the dedication that these people have put into this cause and continue to put into this cause. And as I mentioned earlier, folks, if you really do feel like making a difference and you do feel like supporting a worthwhile cause, make your way to Broome and go and offer these people a little bit of support. Something really positive that did come out of everybody from the East Coast arriving over there was that it injected a huge amount of confidence into the people that have been there for the long haul. It really did inject some much needed energy into the hearts of these people, and that was a wonderful thing to see. I actually may even get a local radio host called Riddy to come on and have a bit of a chat to you all next week. She was there with us on the ground, and she did quite a lot of interesting investigative reporting while we were there as well. And I might get her to possibly reveal a little bit of that for you if I can talk her into coming onto this show next week. She was quite a legend, folks. She got on a canoe and paddled out to the oil rig to check it out at close range as well. And this is no mean feat, folks. It's out there in the Indian Ocean, quite a good way offshore. And she went out there with a canoe and one other person. And really is quite a frail woman, so I do have an enormous amount of respect for her and her commando tactics, shall I say. And I am most certainly looking forward to going back to James Price Point probably around April or May next year, as I said. There is a great deal of work that has yet to be done there, and they absolutely do need the support of everybody who can ever get there to lend a bit of a hand. It is in quite an out-of-the-way sort of a spot, though, folks. That is something a little bit difficult about it, because it's certainly off the beaten track. There is no easy way to get to Broome. And there's certainly no cheap way. The airfares in there are quite expensive. Though I would suggest if people simply were to fly into Darwin, they would probably be able to get something like a Brits van and possibly drive that over to Broome, or get a cheap rental and drive that across there. It shouldn't be too expensive to do it that way. But I do urge everybody to show all the support you can for these people, because it is an extremely important issue and they really do need all the help that they can get. Look, that's about it for me for the day, folks. It has been a pleasure to come back onto the air and talk to you again. Thank you for continuing to visit thecrowhouse.com. Thank you for any support you may have ever shown to the website. It is very much in need at the moment, so if you can drop a few dollars in the bin, it would be much appreciated, but of course only if you can afford to do so. I will endeavour to bring shows to you on a more regular basis now that I'm back home. I may be moving soon, but I'm not quite sure at this stage. I'm still keeping my options open, but that may be happening sometime within the next month or two. I might be getting out of my little tiny cabin that I'm in, folks, and maybe into something a little bit larger, which would be quite a good thing, folks, because I am very pushed for room in this little place that I'm in. It has been a very effective little cabin that I live in, and it has been a wonderful reprieve for me, but I really do need a little bit more space, I'm thinking, so I'll just see how that goes anyway. But that is it for me for the day, folks. Thank you very much for spending this time with me, and I will look forward to speaking to you again next week. Please take care until then. In Lakesh.